Bob, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. A startling discovery just a few short days ago. They tested 111 NFL players' brains, and out of 111, 110 had visible signs of CTE. This is a problem. We join now Dr. Julian Bales on the telephone. We've had Dr. Bales on before. He's the chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health Systems Neurological Institute. Dr. Bales, thanks for coming back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
This is the scariest news you could possibly imagine when it comes to the after effects of playing football. When you heard these numbers, what was the first thing that came to mind?
Well, it was a good study. It's published in a reputable medical journal. I think the science is good. It's interesting. I don't think it's a lot of new information. I think it's what we've known before, and that is that the ones who have symptoms and have had the exposure to, in this case, years of football playing at a very high level, and who had developed symptoms, they're very likely going to be positive. This drives it home that, you know, 99% plus are positive.
I have a couple of friends who unfortunately are divorced now, but a major portion of their fighting was their son wanted to play football, and the mom said, no way. And what do you say to people listening out there now? Because there are a lot of people who still, hey, a kid loves football, we're going to let him play. What can you say to them to help put their mind at ease a little bit?
Well, those are good questions, Wendy, that I get a lot as well. So, you know, these players they're talking about in this study were really part of what's now a bygone era. They played in the 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, and maybe 90s. This discovery of brain injury in football has just happened in the last few years. And so the style of play, the style of practice, the excessive, egregious head-to-head hits, for the most part, are not occurring nearly like they did before, and practice contact has been cut way back. For instance, the NFL, after they break camp in August, only has 14 contact practices the entire season. But nonetheless, that's a very important question you ask, and so my answer to that directly is, look, we know more about concussions than we ever did. We know more about the exposure. We know about the symptoms. So parents and athletes and coaches need to be aware of those. If they believe that the risk-benefit ratio outweighs their concern and the player understands that and he's of a consenting age that he gets it, then I think it is safe to play football. And especially if they're not sustaining multiple symptomatic concussions, they can do that safely, especially in the high school, youth and high school years.
So, Dr. Bales, that said, as you just pointed out, a lot of these players played, you know, years ago, and there's more safety measures in place. But give me a realistic guess. Now, this study showed 99%. If you took players today and gave them this exact same study, what's a realistic number to expect percentage-wise would show signs?
Of the ones who play at what level getting CTE changes
yeah.
in the brain?
Yeah.
Well, I think the real risk doesn't accrue until you play professionally. There's been very few that have been discovered at the college level only, none at the youth level only, and just a handful have had CTE changes who have played high school only. So the real risk technically is if you play for many, many years, it's an exposure paradigm. And so it means the more you've been exposed, it's like how many packs of cigarettes have you smoked and what's your chance of getting lung cancer. So the risk, we don't know. We don't have that data. We don't have the epidemiology, the surveillance, longitudinal studies. I think the risk if you play in high school is extremely small, less than 1%. And I think the risk if you play through college is maybe a little bit higher. We just don't know. We don't have that denominator of what the actual number is.
All right. We have a listener who has texted into us. My 21-year-old daughter has had 5 concussions, 3 of them pretty bad, where she couldn't drive for 8 months. Does that make her more vulnerable to CTE?
Well, I don't know what sport this is, or we don't know how severe the concussions were or how they were managed, or did they have one concussion on top of another. There's a lot of factors that go into answering that question. There hasn't really been a girl or female discovered with CTE yet, and most girls' sports don't have nearly the repetitive head impacts that football or ice hockey has had in the past anyway. So the answer is that the risk is very small. We don't know for certain what it is, but it's small.
So when they talk about other sports, this is almost exclusively football, but the other sport that keeps getting mentioned is soccer. So the parallel is what? Is a header, you're hitting the ball with your head?
Yes, yeah, so that's very, very common in soccer, as you know, and also they collide a lot. They collide with other players or sometimes with a goal post, or they hit the ground. So soccer is probably the number one cause of concussion in girls' sports, women's sports. There has not been a soccer player, to my knowledge, diagnosed with CTE. They just don't get the thousands of head impacts that football players get. And football players wear a helmet that has given some a false sense of security, because even though the head has this external protection, the brain is floating inside the skull and is still able to move back and forth and undergo concussion.
My brother played high school football. He was a running back. He was pretty good. I remember, and this was quite a long time ago, in the late 70s, mid-70s, he had this special helmet that my mom had to pay for. We had to pay extra for it, but it had this like gel in it. It was kind of unheard of back then, and it was supposed to protect the player. But now someone has texted if the players went back to wearing, like, for instance, those leather helmets and helmets without the protection, would players play differently and maybe not have the false sense of security that these new helmets give them?
Well, people have suggested that, you know, has the modern helmet paradoxically and ironically led to more concussions? There is no concussion-proof helmet. And the problem is that, you know, people who are wearing helmets, they tend to, if they're this kind of player, to stick their head in there. And so the analogy I use is that, you know, when we were kids, and even, you know, girls may play very rough. You may slam somebody to the ground, but you would never run cranium to cranium against another human. You just wouldn't do it. No one would do it now. But the helmet has encouraged those who have the propensity to do it to stick their head in there, and the brain is still floating and sloshing around inside the skull despite the helmet.
And what about, like, I know some boxing greats have had some issues, but there's a mixed martial arts going on right now. Any chance this is bad for this type of injury as well?
Well, it hasn't really been described very much, but if you watch mixed martial arts, of course, it looks extremely brutal, and there are at times a lot of blows to the head, so I can't believe that it's going to be good for the brain. We haven't had a lot of scientific studies about their brains yet, because right now you've got to be dead before the brain can be removed and examined. Remember, CTE was first discovered in boxers in 1929.
Now, how did that come to be? What was going on in 1929 that they decided to test a boxer's brain?
Well, there was a medical examiner in New Jersey named Harrison Martland, and he noticed that a lot of boxers were becoming demented at a very early age, and when you're young like that, it's not Alzheimer's disease. So he started taking the brains out and doing autopsies, and he found a lot of changes in the brain, and this was called dementia pugilistica. We all grew up knowing it as punch drunkenness.
Sure.
And we in society accepted that about 25% of former professional boxers would get demented. It's just that no one really seemed to care that much, and it wasn't until our work with American football, which is a modern, beloved, and helmeted sport, in the first case of Mike Webster, the former Pittsburgh Steeler great, it wasn't until that modern era of football that we really got the attention that it deserved.
Our guest is Dr. Julian Bales, a medical doctor, chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health Systems Neurological Institute. We'll pick this conversation up in just a few moments. If you want to jump in, we're easy to reach at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder with you on WGN.
We are talking to Dr. Julian Bales right now, chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health System's Neurological Institute. Doctor, I really am kind of glad that I don't have athletes. I have one kid who is a musician, one who likes to play video games, because my brother played football. A lot of kids in the neighborhood play football, and it would be very hard for me to say, no, son, don't play football.
Okay. Well, I can understand that feeling, and I think a lot, and maybe more than ever before, of parents and family members share your feelings.
However, if you have a kid who wants to play, are there certain things that have changed because of these CTE studies that have come out? For instance, a head injury or a concussion or just a bad blow to the head, is it like a mandatory time where they have to miss the next game or something? Has anything changed because of all this?
Yeah, a lot has changed. So much has changed. So if you get a suspected concussion, not even a definite one, but if anyone suspects that you have one, you should be pulled out of that game or that practice and not return until you've been cleared by a licensed medical professional. And all 50 states now have laws that mandate that. So it's no longer the guesswork or is it cleared and now they can go back. If you have one, if there's any doubt, you're out for that day. The rules have changed. No more hitting defenseless players, blindsiding players, hitting head-to-head in the open field. Almost every level of play does not have much head contact in practice anymore. There's been more and more attention to adherence to these rules. So if parents have a son who plays or a girl that plays soccer, they want to know that the coach understands this, gets it, adheres to these rules, is very conservative with their child's brain, does not do excessive head contact in practice. If these things are followed, these sports are safer than ever. But remember, as I always advise parents also, that if they're not at football or soccer games or practice, what are they going to be doing? It is not, especially I know from personal experience, for boys, a risk-aversive age when you're a teenager. So there's a couple hundred kids killed on bicycles every year. There's a few thousand killed in car accidents every year. So you have to weigh what is the alternative activities, not to mention video addiction, video game addiction, obesity, inactivity, and other things.
That's absolutely true.
Dr. Bales, I know in other sports, I was watching the Cubs game the other day. John Jay, the Cubs outfielder, got hit lightly in the head with a pitch. So they take a few minutes and they take him aside and they ask him a series of questions. Is that standard now in sports to throw some questions at the player to see if they're cognizant?
It is, and you know, concussion, part of the problem is it's an injury you can't see. There's no swelling, there's no bleeding, and so it's really just what you saw. It's questioning, analyzing the player, pulling them out, having a cool-down period until the coach or the athletic trainer, whoever's attending that person, is convinced there's not a question of concussion.
And I know that obviously big blows to the head are problematic, but now it's been brought forward that it's the repetitive hits, even smaller ones. Is that true?
Yeah, that's the so-called subconcussion blows. And so that means a blow to the head that does not rise to the level of a known or diagnosed concussion. So we think that those little hits that are repetitive may also accrue. They may add up. They may be injurious in the long run. And remember that players like Mike Webster, the first case of CTE in a football player, had played football 27 years. Junior Seau played 30 years. Neither of them had any diagnosed concussions in their career. So it's the exposure issue once again.
And this cannot be found in the brain until after the person has died, correct?
Correct.
Because there are people that say, oh, yeah, I've heard CTE. You know, there are students in high school. That's not possible if the person is still alive.
No, it's during the autopsy that they would determine that. Here's a strange question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, Dr. Bales. Do you think if O.J. Simpson was on trial today for the murders, could they have used CTE as a defense?
They certainly maybe would have tried.
Yeah.
You'd have to ask an attorney if it has risen to a level of a legitimate excuse or explanation.
That's an interesting question.
The problem is very inconvenient when you can't diagnose a condition until someone's dead.
Right.
We have been working here at North Shore with UCLA on a PET scan, which is able to detect CTE changes in living people. That's in the early stages, and we're very optimistic about that potential. We've got to be able to diagnose it when people are alive if we're going to help them.
Right.
Got to protect that noggin, don't you? We have Barbara on the line. I think we have time for one question. Barbara, your question for Dr. Julian Bales.
Hi. Actually, it's not a question. I was explaining to your producer that...
you got to hang on. I accidentally hung up on him.
Dr. Bales, you did?
Yeah, no. I didn't. So we have to call. We have to call him back.
All right,
he's got to call us back.
Well, ask
actually,
the, what's the question?
I didn't have a question for him, but I wanted to make a comment, though. You know, I mean, this is really sad, and because I have grandchildren that play football,
yeah.
And you know, the children that are going into it. So I understand what everybody's saying, but you know, when you think about it, there are so many professions that all of us have been through that have got some kind of a side effect. I was a hairdresser for 32 years,
mm-hmm.
and now I have COPD. I never smoked. I was a very light drinker,
mm-hmm.
but I have COPD now from, I guess, inhaling the aerosols. And, you know, we've got coal miners, and we've got, my husband was in the Navy, and he dealt with all the asbestoses, you know,
yeah.
that was in the air. And I'm not trying to minimize
CTE,
concussions and
right.
things, but there are just so many people that are suffering with, I mean, we've got people suffering from Agent Orange from Vietnam. We just lost a friend with Parkinson's. You know, there are just so many things in life that affect us physically
sure.
and affect our health that,
And Dr. Bales, that's what Barbara was saying, is there are other professions that have other risks. She just wanted to point that out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And heavy duty risks that, you know, it's going to take, the COPD is going to take my life, you know.
So there you have it, Dr. Bales. That's what her comment was. Sorry, I hung up on you.
No problem. I thought she didn't agree with what I said.
No, she does. It's just there are other professions and other risks associated with other things.
Yeah, of course. That's assumption of risk. And many, many men and women have jobs that are dangerous, and many can die. So that's under the category of assumption of risk.
So, Dr. Bales, when you hear, and this has been an ongoing topic where people say at some point down the road, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a college or a high school football program, that's impossible. That's not going away anytime soon, is it?
I don't think so. I hope not. I believe there are many benefits to all these sports, especially football, and I'm still very supportive of the sport. It's our job to bring attention to these issues, just as your show is doing, and try to make people more educated and thoughtful about it. But once again, what are the alternative activities? Everything we do has pros and cons.
And as a listener, we're out of time, but a listener was holding on to say it's also the responsibility relies on the coaches and the trainers as well. And Dr. Bales had a great point. If your kid's playing football out there, have an ongoing conversation with the coaches and the trainers and find out what they're doing to protect your kids. Some great advice from you, Dr. Julian Bales. A pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, I enjoyed talking to you.
Take care, Dr. Bales. We'll take a quick break, then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.